Spider-Man. Get pictures of Spider-Man.
Parker.
Parker.
Welcome to Open Sources Guelph here on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. I am Adam A. Donaldson of Guelph Politico, and joining me is...
I'm Yanni Lauren Hertz, depending on what frequency you guys hear.
Oh my goodness.
Actually, yeah, we lost 19 listeners from me just saying that, right? I don't want to talk about
it. He's not going to take it seriously.
He's not going to talk about it. What did you hear? I don't... Forget it.
Forget it.
Did
forget
you
it,
see it, what Mark... Marley, what's her name? Marley Matlin said?
No, that's an interesting comment.
She said, I can't hear a thing.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which has the virtue of being funny and true. Yeah, Open Sources is CFRU's political and current affairs discussion show, and you can listen to us here on CFRU every Thursday at 5 p.m. You can also listen to us live online. Go to CFRU.ca and click on the Listen Now icon at the top right-hand corner of your screen, and you can listen to us anytime by downloading the Open Sources podcast on Podbean, iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play. Today, we are finally going to dig into the issues with our local provincial candidates here in Guelph. So in the second half of the hour, we will have the Green Party's Mike Schreiner in, and he'll be in after the break. And for the first half, as you heard, we have Juanita Burnett of the Communist Party. Juanita, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for asking me.
Yeah, you don't get asked to all the political events, do you?
Not all. I have a feeling more than some towns do.
I think you're right. Yeah. There's how many communists running in this election?
There are 12 this year.
Okay. Yeah. Quite a few.
That's not bad.
Yeah.
I was referring to, of course, the chamber debate, and I know Paul Taylor of None of the Above. He's got a head of steam about it because I've talked to him about it. But how are you feeling? I mean, it's sad that it's standard operating procedure of the chamber to just go with the four major party candidates. So, how do you feel about it? Are you planning any kind of protest?
I don't know that I'm going to protest that this year. I think I have other things to do. It's not that surprising in Guelph, and I don't know that would be my target audience anyway.
Good point. Are you going to any of the other debates at all? Or
I was at the Social Justice Coalitions, mm-hmm. which was awesome, and mm-hmm. all eight were invited, and seven of us went.
It was awesome for many of you, let's be honest.
It was pretty awesome.
Yeah,
it was pretty
great.
We
enjoyed it a lot.
We did it, and we dedicated a whole episode of the Politicast to breaking that down.
Yeah.
I did want to start with that debate because there was a part of it I really liked that you were involved in when you were talking about the Communist Party platform, which is calling for $20 minimum wage.
Yes,
and there were more than a few snickers even in the social justice audience about $20 minimum wage, and you said $15 just a few years ago was that pipe dream. You would get up the last election, say $15 minimum wage, and people are like, okay, Juanita. So, I mean, that must feel pretty good.
Yeah. Yeah, it feels pretty good. And as of our last contract negotiations, I actually make just over $15 an hour now.
Mm-hmm.
And if the minimum wage actually goes up in January, I'm really happy to know that we'll be bargaining again.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Because, it is chasing like some elusive thing, trying to get mm-hmm. enough and then also trying to raise everybody else up at the same time.
Yeah. And I mean, you're one of the people that's in like a unique position where, through your union bargaining, or even for people who don't have a union bargaining, just, had a $15 wage mm-hmm. at their job. But there are people who, because of their situation, look at the $15 minimum wage and go, oh, well, that diminishes my work. Can you speak to that? Because I find that's a difficult thing for people to...
So that there won't be enough jobs to go around if
It's not just that, but I'm someone who has I guess it has to do with the stigmatizing people who work in the minimum wage industry, so service industry, restaurants and things.
Mm-hmm.
But there are people who see that and go, "What that I guess they, what they do is they devalue one set of work and overvalue another set of work.
Yeah. And it's interesting when you see it play out. I work at the university library, mm-hmm. and I work part-time, and I'm not an actual librarian.
Mm-hmm.
So $15 an hour seems to be okay with people.
Mm. Yeah.
And it's been a fight to get that.
Yeah.
Where I'm not sure where people decide on value,
yeah.
for work, because there are so many jobs that are highly undervalued,
mm-hmm.
and usually women do them.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know who decides. Well, I know who decides, but I don't like it.
Should just mention, in the interest of full disclosure, that Juanita and I are in the same union here.
Get out.
It's true.
It's true.
Just no, I mean, get out.
Get out. Get your stuff. Get out of the UC. You're not welcome there anymore.
We're going
as
there.
You may have, as you may have heard, yeah. It's
that was too topical.
Thing, yeah. But yeah, that will not make sense if you listen to this 5 years from now. But.
That joke was too topical.
Yeah. We're the talk of the town.
Yeah, no, for real. Juanita, let's get serious again. Could you tell people what it means to you to be a member of the Communist Party?
I've been thinking about that, and I continue to think about that, because when I first got involved politically, it was with the NDP.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, I still have a lot of friends there. I still share a lot of their values.
Mm-hmm.
But more and more, the Communist Party is the one that speaks to me. I think it's so very working class, mm-hmm. and not all of them are. It's not establishment.
Does anybody ever take you to task for being a member of the Communist Party? Because for a lot of people... maybe not necessarily in Guelph, but in other places. We have to be honest. There's people that came to Canada to kind of get away from all of that far enough back, and maybe even currently too. Does anybody ever like really? You know, we were saying about the debate how it's like you're accepted in Guelph. The party was founded in Guelph, which we no one.
Yes,
the same,
it was.
Because it's pretty cool.
Yeah.
You drive up. The house is still there, isn't it?
I don't think it is. And I think
the barn
it was
there anyway. But
Metcalf Street?
Yeah, Metcalf Street.
Yeah.
That was when Metcalf was the outskirts
the
of
country,
town.
Yeah, yeah. The country, so, yeah. Country. So hiding out in a barn. But so just wondering, like, does anybody ever give... I'm sure you probably get trolls and things online, as we all do, but probably to a different degree than...
Yeah, probably not near as much as I expected to. Mm. It happens.
Mm.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
But Guelph is pretty, pretty welcoming, I think.
Yeah.
Or has been. I keep saying, you know, I have big shoes to fill with Drew Garvey and all the work he did in Guelph. He gained a lot of respect for the party here.
Mm-hmm.
And to answer your earlier question about...
<That's okay.
laughs> about debates, I am actually invited to the one at Lourdes as well. So.
Oh, great, good. Great. That's awesome.
Yeah.
When is that one?
The 23rd, I believe.
Okay.
Yeah.
We just like to, you know, get people excited, go to things, you know.
That's true. That's a good thing.
I did want to ask you about, I did look at the Communist Party platform. It is very comprehensive, so I will highlight a few things. One is there's a pretty big section on on equity.
Yes.
So I wanted to ask you your thoughts on how the present government has done on that file, and where you think the communists can make a bigger difference.
In 25 words or less.
Well,
we
have 20 minutes.
Yeah. Oh, okay, yeah. 25 minutes or less.
Yeah.
Well, the Liberal Party, the current government, talks a really good talk.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not sure how much further it goes than that, really.
Mm-hmm.
I think the whole idea that, you know, we're talking about Kinder Morgan getting paid because people didn't want the pipeline.
Mm-hmm.
And talking about how, you know, they're all for indigenous rights doesn't make sense to me. So I think the Communist Party, the members that I know are from all over the world, all over the country. And I think they have a broader view of what equality means.
Mm.
And I think there it's certainly time for that.
Okay. Well, what does it mean to them?
What does it mean? Yeah. It means things like we believe healthcare should be for everybody. So whether you're legal or not, you need to be looked after. And that's a part of equality. Like, again, borders weren't like written in stone.
Sure. Yeah.
So
the world wasn't divided.
Yeah.
It wasn't made divided. Yeah. We get you.
Yeah. So it's all arbitrary anyway. And so limiting things like basic things people need based on where you were born or where you should be makes no sense to me.
Mm-hmm. One of the things, too, that I'm actually surprised isn't getting more play, and not even the Green Party's raised it too much, is school boards and you know, removing the Catholic school board and then taking us down to one school board to rule us all. you know, is that getting a lot of attention, or is that getting enough attention in your perspective?
Not a lot. I'm a little surprised. It might be interesting to see how it goes over at Lourdes.
Ooh, yeah,
that would be a good test. Yeah,
but I think it's time. I think education is in trouble in a lot of ways, and I think one of the things, not necessarily related to four different school boards, but the idea that it's dangerous to be a teacher, even in elementary school.
Mm.
And we need more teachers. We need better paid teachers. We need more mental health care all over the board, but it affects education as well. And I think if we can cut down some of the bureaucracy around school, and getting rid of Catholic school funding is one way to do it.
Mm-hmm.
We can focus it better.
Mm-hmm. Can you talk a bit about those dangers? Because that came up in the debate, mm-hmm. too. And yeah. I feel like this is one of those stories that doesn't get picked up. Because I feel like, you know, teachers who are concerned about safety should be a bigger story. But I got to say, I don't know much about it.
Well, sitting on the Guelph and District Labor Council as a rep, you hear teachers' stories.
Mm-hmm.
And when you first hear about violence in schools or violence in the workplace, you don't think about the 5-year-old who harms a teacher because there aren't a lot of resources in place to make that not happen.
Right.
And it's tricky to figure out a way to fix it. But we need to be doing that, because a workplace should be a safe place. And schools are teachers' workplaces.
Right. For those kids, some of that must be mental health issues.
Yes. Yes. Some of it's mental health. Some of it's, I think, probably, like, we talk about capping class sizes.
Right.
And that's important. But one teacher for 25 kids is still a lot. And sometimes kids just get upset.
Mm.
And it's, you know, I don't think we need to go back to the strapping days, but we need to figure out how to fix that.
Mm-hmm.
And when you have one or even two teachers in charge of 25 young kids, it's really hard to take time to take a child aside and talk gently to them, or find ways to make it not dangerous.
Mm-hmm. It's a matter of resources too, then.
Yeah.
One of the things that caught my eye about the Communist platform is that you have a sports, culture, and recreation platform.
Yeah.
Why is that an election issue?
I really feel like our program, our platform, is about a whole community lifestyle change that's needed here. Mm-hmm. And one of the things, you know, the whole 8 hours of work, 8 hours of sleep, and 8 hours what you will.
Not necessarily that evenly split.
Well, it's
not for millennials, no.
No, and whether we want to have it exactly those numbers anymore, we need to look at how we can fit leisure into our lives. And, you know, sports is also healthy. So,
sure.
You know, talking about prevention, if people are active longer, they're going to be healthier longer.
Mm-hmm. Even esports? I'm just asking. I think a lot of people hear that and think, well, that sounds very nice. But, you know, I'm worried about still having a job. I'm worried about gas prices. I'm worried about hydro prices. Someone like me who's kind of steeped in the political affairs knows that, you know, there's a lot of intersectionality and a lot of these things tie together a lot. But how do you talk to someone who, you know, I guess is more focused on what's immediately in front of them? Because I think a lot of what the Communist platform talks about is like basically shifting society, basically turning society on its axis, which takes a while. But, yeah. You know, the people have the more immediate needs. So how do you balance that?
I'm learning. I'm trying to learn. Mm-hmm. I feel like a lot of my life was trying to learn to speak my mind and get words out and, you know, even the hard things, talk about them.
Mm-hmm.
Now I'm trying to also find a way to do it more diplomatically, more thoughtfully, and really try to hear the other side. That being said, for so many of us, one of the reasons people are running around stressed out all the time is because of the situation as it is.
Mm-hmm.
And this, I think our program, you know, we're talking about cutting work week to 32 hours a week.
Mm-hmm.
And having enough to live on doing that. And if that's in place, you're not having to worry so much, you know. Public transit, if we could get public transit set to work more efficiently, people wouldn't have to worry about gas quite as much.
I don't think you're wrong. But like public transit is something I always struggle with in terms of like, I will talk to people about public transit policy, and I will always ask them a question. It's like, okay, let's put more money to transit, let's have more buses, more trains, etc. But how do you get people out of their cars? And I feel that's the piece that's always missing. Everybody agrees congestion is bad.
Mm-hmm.
We hate sitting in traffic. We need more buses. But it really seems like no one wants to be the first person to get out of their car.
Yeah. Well, and it's hard. One of the ways I really feel we can look harder is intensification of housing.
Mm.
So instead of like building out and out and out, if we build up and more compacted, more people will be taking the bus in more places, and it makes more sense because we'll need more buses. And more people will get their needs met.
And of course, that would be affordable. I think that's in your policy too. 200,000 affordable units, something like that.
So. Yeah.
Very ambitious.
It is. More ambitious.
That's like all the units, right? All the units should be affordable.
Well,
theoretically.
Up from zero, which is what we have in Guelph, right? Yeah.
Well, and keeping up to the need because, you know, I don't. Again, I know why, but it's really frustrating seeing more and more buildings happening but not the ones that are really needed.
Mm-hmm. Right. And I mean, and that's a realistic struggle. And I feel like that's sort of key to all this, is that we know what the problems are. Everybody has ideas to fix the problems, but it seems like we never are able to connect the two. I mean, the city has done studies into like affordable housing. What is affordable and getting those yeah. metrics done? But it hasn't built one single unit so far of extra affordable housing. And of course, definitions of affordable are different too. Like the city, when city talks about affordable housing, it's like a little bit cheaper than yeah. the market value versus yeah. social
and it's in
housing.
Fergus, right? They talk about this Fergus development. Was it 55 homes in Fergus?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Really help us, doesn't it?
Yeah, the county.
Because there's
seems
lots of transit to
Well, that's it was deferred. It's like, well, it's the county's responsible for it. So
right.
it's like, so why are they building some here?
Which.
We it's, went total municipal on that, but sort of. Right?
No, it also spreads across the province mm-hmm. because there are like all kinds of small rural areas
right.
that are getting a nursing home in a small town. Is great if you can actually have enough people to run it properly.
Right.
And I know my sister-in-law is working at a nursing home where they're always understaffed because people, it's a job you can't really do full-time easily.
Mm-hmm.
But people aren't going to move to, you know, a town of 1,600 people to work a part-time job.
And they're usually yeah. built out in the boonies because it's cheaper to do that, and no one in the nursing home is necessarily going places a lot, right?
So. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which sounds kind of bad when you phrase it like
No,
that.
It's like there's a poultry farm, and then there's a yeah. senior's farm next door owned by the same company. But
right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, we are talking about municipal stuff, but I mean, yeah. this is where the province should have a say because...
Yeah.
Looking at it the other way, a lot of people end up homeless in these smaller areas, and then they end up emigrating to the big cities like Guelph, Kitchener, because they think they're going to have an easier time finding a place. And it turns out the exact opposite is true, that if they can find a place, they're very unlikely to be able to afford it, too.
Yeah. Yeah.
Downer.
yeah.
I wanted to ask you, too, about manufacturing. The Communist Platform has very, I think, optimistic idea about bringing back manufacturing when I think it's both here and in the United States, we're talking about robots mostly taking those jobs. It's not a matter of just, you know, shirking off, you know, cheap Chinese labor or anything like that. But so I'm wondering, you know, are we being a bit ambitious about that goal? About like bringing manufacturing back is one thing. But the nature of the business, like changing it back to being how it used to be with, you know, good old hands-on labor is another thing.
I think manufacturing, bringing it back doesn't necessarily mean bringing the same thing back.
Mm-hmm.
I think we need to work on different things. People are still going to be needed for some things,
mm-hmm.
but it's also part of the reason we're trying to look at a 32-hour work week.
Mm.
So you don't have to work 80 hours to afford your great big house. You don't. Mm. But there are plenty of things that we still need to come up with. And if we don't have to focus our energies on just surviving, we could maybe come up with, you know, greener energy,
mm-hmm.
better, I don't know, better boxes, better, I don't know.
So we can live with the robots peacefully is what you're saying.
I think we have to. It's funny because I was in high school when they were talking about the paperless office and what are we going to do? And it's finally coming and we're still not ready because I think we gave up believing that. Like 20 years ago.
Mm-hmm. Cashless society, too, for that matter.
Yeah.
We are running out of time, sadly.
Uh-oh.
It goes fast.
It goes fast. It goes fast. So I'm wondering, is there a particular issue you think is worried that's going to get lost in the noise on this election? And what do you want to, issue do you want to promote in the election? Didn't mean to stump you.
All of them.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm really, really proud of our platform. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to lose focus on Indigenous people's issues. Mm-hmm. Missing and murdered Indigenous girls and women. Mm. And, you know, safe water.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how that is still a problem.
Mm.
And, well, again, I know how. I just think it's so wrong.
Right. It should be axiomatic that, you know, if somebody's water is bad, we fix it because
you need water to live.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I hear you. Okay. Well, before we run out of time, then, why don't you tell people where they can find out more about the Communist Platform and where they can find out more about you and how they can get in touch with you if they so desire.
Okay, so the website is communistpartyontario.ca.
Mm-hmm.
And our full program's there. I think there are or will be links to the various candidates. Social media, we're on Facebook, we're on Twitter. And yeah, I'm pretty easy to find, I think.
You have any big events coming up? You doing any rallies or anything?
We're hoping to have Dave McKee come in. We haven't figured out a day yet. He's the provincial leader of the Communist Party.
Nice.
And also, he was with the Peace. I can't even think of it. Anyway, he was working for Peace also and still does.
Okay, great. He's running in Davenport.
The Canadian Peace Congress.
There you
yeah,
go.
Yeah, that's it. Thanks.
And he's running in Davenport, yeah.
Good old yes, internet.
Is. Yes. What a world.
Makes it sound like we know what we're talking about. By the way.
We are no experts. Anyway. Juanita, thank you so much for coming in today and for being the first of eight and wearing the Gone Guelph swag. It's
I want a whole set.
Collect all whatever.
See Jenny Mitchell down the hall.
Yes. Definitely. Yes.
Well, again, Juanita, thank you so much for joining us, and good luck on the campaign trail.
Thank you both.
And we are going to take a break now, and we're going to assume Mike Schreiner is outside and waiting. Will he be here when we get back? I don't know. You'll have to wait till after the commercials to
might
see.
Have to just make some stuff up.
Oh, he'll be there.
He'll be here. He's usually very
may pumped, have to break so. Out the Mike Schreiner impression. Uh-oh.
Ooh. Haven't heard that one.
I'm going to stick around air. Now and hear that.
You're listening to Open Sources here on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus, and Community Radio.
You're listening to CFRU 93.3 FM.
Sloan from their brand new album, 12. I believe it's called 12. Yes, it is. That song was called The Day Will Be Mine, which mm-hmm. I think is the wish for all candidates who are listening in this room. Sooner or later, the day will be theirs.
Well, we're going to find out soon
and today,
enough.
Right now.
Yeah. for this, well, this half hour is Mike Schreiner's anyway, and I think Open Sources listeners are familiar with Mike. Maybe too familiar. we kid here. But Mike, thank you so much for coming back and exposing yourself to me and Scotty's charms.
My pleasure, and I'm glad that you didn't have to do any like impersonations or anything. That I was actually here for you.
Yeah, no, it's
that would have been tragic. I think.
You're canceled.
Yeah. Get your stuff. Yeah. We'd be finished.
Oh goodness. I wanted to begin by getting your thoughts about we talked to Juanita about the chamber debate and how she won't be there, and you will be there, and I know this is not an unfamiliar situation, at least on the other foot.
That's right.
So how do you feel that, you know, we have candidates who will not be part of the televised debate?
Yeah, I've already put out a statement, actually, saying that I think all the candidates should be a part of the debate. And when I just saw Juanita in the hallway as we were crossing paths, I just reiterated to her, I think all candidates should be in the debate. And, you know, obviously I feel her pain at the televised leaders debate. And you know what? I think we need more democracy, not less democracy in Ontario. And that holds for Guelph as well. Mm-hmm. And at the very least, one of the things I've proposed in these situations where they think, oh, like, you know, which parties or whatever is, you know, maybe have a debate with the four major parties, but then have a secondary debate for all the other parties. If you're worried about, you know, just how much time there is on the stage, just to create space and opportunity for everyone's voices to be heard.
Mm-hmm. Let me ask you one thing. Given what we've seen from the televised leaders debates, you're kind of glad you're not there, aren't you?
Well, you know what? I'll have to say, the very first one, I can't believe everybody people said to me, like, Mike, you won the first debate. Just your Twitter feed won the first debate.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you know what it is? It's like, it just shows you what is so wrong with Ontario politics. Like, you really had three leaders more focused on tearing each other down than building Ontario up. Like, the level of bickering, and, you know, unfortunately, that's what you see all too often at Queen's Park.
Right.
And I know political parties disagree. I mean, we wouldn't have separate political parties if we all agreed with each other. But I think there are opportunities when parties can come together. And I just think in the last provincial election, when I was able to bring all four parties together, you know, Liberal, Green, and NDP candidates to speak out in support of protecting Guelph's water from the Dolheim Quarry. Mm-hmm. And I also really led the charge at Queen's Park to get all four parties behind fundraising reform legislation to ban corporate and union donations and lower donation limits. So I think it's possible to find opportunities when you can bring parties together, but it doesn't happen enough at Queen's Park. And that first leaders debate, it was a clear example of that.
Mm. Well, Scotty, I'd agree. We like your smile. let's talk about some issues stuff. One of the things that stuck out to me at the All Canada's debate last week, we had Aggie Milner's talking about how NDP is going to buy back Hydro One. And you, I don't remember your exact wording, but you said, like, I wish I could promise that, but... are the NDP, I'm not to get you to comment on another party's policy, but are they being naive or are you being pragmatic?
Maybe a little of both. So, you know what? I thought the Liberals made a huge mistake privatizing Hydro One. I mean, I spoke out against it. We did media campaigns against it, editorials against it. I mean, you know, I showed up in front of Liz Sandel's office a couple times with some of the groups here in Guelph speaking out against it. I would like us to buy back enough to get back to 50%. I think that's possible. But the idea that we're going to, you know, spend upwards of $6 billion to buy back the full Hydro One just seems to me that's money that could be better spent. Mm. You know, better education, better public services, better transit, a whole host of other priorities. And so I don't know how realistic it is. The one thing I will say, though, is, you know, let's go back to 2014 when we had a minority government. And the Liberals were trying to figure out a way to fund transit, and the NDP voted against every revenue tool to fund transit. That was when I started my whole campaign against magic money and fairy dust to fund transit, because it seemed to be what all the parties were talking about. And so the Liberals, in desperation, I think, made a bad choice to privatize Hydro One, because it ended up actually just mostly going to paying off debt and actually not investing in transit. But I think all three parties hold some responsibility, because none of them were willing to follow expert recommendations of how to fund transit expansion. Mm-hmm. And that led then to the Liberals making a very bad decision to privatize Hydro One.
Our expert recommendations about Hydro, for that matter, it's...
Well, there's that too. They haven't followed those either, have they?
Yeah. I mean, it's such a complicated issue. You know, and I have... I'm a pretty obvious news consumer, and I have trouble wrapping my head around Hydro, why prices are so high, why we can't seem to do anything about it, why you get a $170 bill for not using any hydro. We're not going to solve that here today.
But. Well, I can give you, you know, can I give you a few solutions?
Yes,
to it?
By
yeah,
means.
I mean, so first of all, we have to say no to OPG's request to increase prices for nuclear power by 180% in the next decade to rebuild our outdated overpriced nuclear plants. Like, that to me is a non-starter. If you think the 70% increase we've had in the last decade has hit you hard, imagine if our primary source of power increases by 180%, especially when we can buy low-cost water power from Quebec at one-third of the price. Like, to me, that just makes sense. And then the Green Party, what we would do with the $1 billion a year in savings is invest in your home and your business to help you save money by saving energy, which would make our businesses more competitive because it would reduce our energy costs. And it would help homeowners and families and individuals because it would help them come up with long-term solutions to rising energy prices. So you know what? That's not going to solve all of it, but that would get at the root of the problem that none of the other three parties are talking about because nobody wants to take on the nuclear lobby.
Yeah, and it seems to me that a lot of the, I mean, both the PCs and the Liberals, it's an artificial solution. We're going to lower the prices today but end up paying for it tomorrow.
Well, all three of the parties seem to be in this bidding war of, you know, how high of a discount we can promise people. Like, I actually thought it just jokingly of putting out a news release saying, Greens will pay you to consume electricity just to drive home the point. So you're absolutely right. So all three of the status quo parties have proposals to artificially lower electricity prices by varying degrees. And here's the reality is after the election, they're going to skyrocket again. So it's a temporary prior election gimmick that's actually going to cost us more. So in the case of the unfair hydro plan, which the Liberals put forward and now the Conservatives have embraced and even want to go further, the Financial Accountability Office said that's going to cost us between $40 and $90 billion over the next two decades. That is money that should be going to healthcare, education, you know, balancing our books, better transit, better public services. So we are going to pay big time for their mistakes.
What do you think about something like California mandating that new homes will have solar panels on it? Is that anywhere in the green policy in terms of like getting solar and wind? And I'm sure it is, but
yeah. So for us, it's building code upgrades. Like, we really should not be building any more new homes that are not energy efficient. I mean, here in Guelph alone, we have three, four builders who are already building near net zero homes, which are highly energy efficient homes for almost the same price as just a standard house. So that kind of energy efficiency should be built into our building code. That way, because it's so much more expensive to retrofit homes later than it is to do it when you build it. And here in Guelph, we're leading the province in that. I'd love to see the rest of the province follow Guelph's lead.
Right on.
Sorry, I tuned out there. I didn't mean to be disrespectful, but there was a major thing just dropped from City Hall. So,
oh no, what was that? You can announce it on air.
Well, they just released the service review.
For
the finals. Going to be a late night for Adam Dunlop.
Yes, it will be.
Thanks. As usual.
Thanks, guys.
Yeah.
Well.
I do follow you on Twitter a lot, though, because I try to be at City Hall. Well, I try to be at City Hall as much as I can because I feel like I have my fingers on the pulse of Guelph, and being at City Hall is a really important part of that. But when I can't physically be there, I'm oftentimes following you on Twitter, Adam.
Mike, if you think flattery is going to make me take it easy on you in this,
no, ask a tough
question. Shout out every night. All right. Cheers to Mike who's watching.
I found this Twitter post from Anna. I'm not done. You're good on Twitter. I did want to ask follow up on that though.
Sure.
The question about getting more support, and I know one of the Green Party planks is to help support the development of green businesses and clean energy and clean tech and all that. You're a business guy, and I think a lot of business guys would characterize that as choosing winners and losers. And I know that term's kind of problematic, but in terms of how you would phrase that and how you would respond to that accusation, how is supporting clean tech and green sectors, or how do you find the fine line between support and choosing winners and losers, I guess?
Yeah, well, part of it is not necessarily choosing winners and losers in terms of individual companies, but actually creating the seed capital and support to help Ontario embrace a whole new industry. And it's not just renewable energy. I mean, the clean economies, bioproducts, food innovation, clean water technology, environmental engineering, stormwater management. So there's a whole range of products and services. And so for me, the Liberals right now spend over $3 billion a year in business support payments, which the Financial Accountability Office has said, we have no idea what their criteria is. And we're simply saying, you know what, let's put criteria in that says, you know what, let's use those dollars to fund where the global economy is going. Let's skate to where the puck is instead of where it's been. And again, for Guelph, I think that's huge. I mean, one of my motivations in wanting to be Guelph's MPP is just to be a huge champion for Guelph and to say to the world, if you want to invest in the clean economy, Guelph is the place to do it. The place in Ontario that elected Ontario's first green MPP, the place in Ontario that's already leading in so many areas, you know, solar manufacturing, geothermal distribution, water technology, stormwater management, environmental engineering, food innovation. And so let's at least have criteria in place that supports Ontario being a global leader in the new economy.
This kind of goes along with that, but you're one of the few politicians, at least running in the provincial race here so far, that I've heard talk about small build, like for housing. Housing's a big issue, of course. A lot of people talk about affordable housing, social housing, money for that. But you're one of the only ones who's talking about like smaller houses, laneway houses, tiny homes, and you know, we had Mayor Guthrie on a couple of weeks ago. It certainly sounded like he was on side. So. Can you talk about what the barriers are to those kind of builds and then what you could do as MPP to get that ball rolling?
Yeah, well, most of the barriers are either in the provincial policy statement, the Planning Act, and or through municipal bylaw. So as an example, in Guelph, we have a 30-foot frontage bylaw, which almost makes it impossible to build tiny homes. And so there's some things that have to be done municipally and provincially. And as Guelph's MPP, you know, I want to work both with the municipality and the province to make those kinds of changes. I mean, I think as I knock on doors in Guelph, I would say that housing affordability is probably the number one issue. I think it's a sleeper issue. Alert to all the other candidates. Because I've knocked on a lot of doors in Guelph. Housing affordability is a huge issue. And so we have a three-part plan that I think is really important. The first part being that basically requiring any new development. So I look at Claire Maltmy as it's going to be developed. 20% of what's there, whether it's rental, subdivision, single family home, condo, 20% should be below market housing. And that primarily builds up housing supply, especially for young families and seniors. Very important. But we also have to have a housing solution for our most vulnerable in our community. And that's why it's so important to put more money into supportive housing, social housing, co-op housing. I mean, there are more people in Ontario on the social housing waiting list than entire social housing homes available for people. Yeah. And then finally, is the point you just made, Adam, is having innovative solutions around changing planning bylaws municipal bylaws to allow for tiny homes, laneway homes, secondary suites, et cetera, because that's a way we can better, more efficiently utilize our existing built environment. And it's a way to increase the supply of affordable housing without always having to build up or build out.
You mentioned Claire Maltby, and that is, you know, we're talking 10, 15 years into the future, but, you know, you're obviously hearing about it, you know, as you're going on. So, I mean, what can we do in the meantime?
Yeah, well, I mean, there's other developments. I mean, Baker Street, for instance, it'd be great if Baker Street had 20% affordable housing. I mean, unfortunately, in that case, the request for proposals are already out. Yeah. So the horse might be out of the barn in that one, but so to speak. But any new development in Guelph. And so I specifically point to Claire Maltmy because that's going to be the biggest housing development, you know, going in the next decade in Guelph. And so I want to have those rules in place so we can build that out in a way that ensures we have affordable housing in Guelph.
I asked Juanita about this because she actually brought it up at the debate last week. And I was actually surprised you didn't, because it was part of the Green Party plank from way back. Is the amalgamation of the school boards still important to the Green Party?
You know, integrating the school boards is still in the Green Party's vision book. We did not put it into our platform priorities because I think there are other higher priorities right now for education. I think in particular, revising the funding formula is just so critically important that that happens. And so that's our biggest priority in education right now. And so Ontario's never recovered from the changes that the Harris government brought in with the funding formula. The Liberals have never fixed it, even after 15 years. And especially when I look at funding designated for children with special needs, especially, but also making sure we have funding supports in place for, you know, enough teachers, educational support staff, libraries, outdoor education, physical education. The funding formula doesn't adequately address those needs. And that, for us, is our top priority because we need to get more resources into our kids' classrooms.
One of the things you did mention, and we asked Juanita about this too, is the violence in schools measure. Yeah. Because I feel, talk about stuff that's something that's under the radar. It seemed to be something that a lot of the, you guys, the candidates, agreed is an issue. But, you know, I, again, having my eyes glued to the computer, you don't hear a lot about it.
No, I think it's one of those things that the schools don't want to talk about publicly for understandable reasons, right? But if you talk to teachers, and in particular you talk to teachers' union leaders, the amount of violence that they're experiencing in the classrooms, and it's primarily students who have special needs or maybe have mental health issues that are not being dealt with properly. And so one of the reasons our platform focuses so much on mental health services is we have a mental health crisis in Ontario. I mean, we have 12,000 children on a mental health wait list. That's unacceptable. I was just literally walking around downtown Guelph before I came here, just shaking hands and talking to people. And I met a young man in his early 20s, and he told me that he was on a wait list for 9 months before somebody even called him. And they phoned him up and they said, "So are you still on the suicide watch list?" He's like, "Yeah, that was 9 months ago."
Oh my goodness.
You know, and so that and that's just unacceptable. And the average wait time is actually 18 months.
Yeah.
And so we have to put more money into mental health services. That would help in schools as well, because there's a lot of children who have special needs and or are experiencing mental health issues, and they're not getting the services and the care they need.
There's an episode of the Politicast coming out with Martin Bauman of the Canadian Mental Health Association, Wellington Waterloo. Plug. But he did mention, and he and I talked about this, that we're kind of siloing mental health from other healthcare concerns.
Very good point.
And I'm, you know, get your reaction to this, but, you know, is it not concerning? Because mental health is kind of, is part of human health. And, it's concerning that we kind of are treating it like the fat issue of this election, that everyone's talking about mental health. Like, it's not part of the bigger picture.
Yeah. So mental health is health.
Yeah.
Mental health should be a part of healthcare. So that's why we've proposed an additional $4 billion investments, which is about $2 billion more than the increase that's been in the Liberal budget. We see that as a pathway to making mental health part of OHIP Plus. Because I think if mental health services was part of OHIP Plus,
then
that's health, right? You take your health card, you get the mental health services you need, you have access to it, you don't have to go into the private sector. I know we have to evolve to that, but putting the down payment on that right now and fighting for that is something that I'm passionate about and will continue to fight for. I think it's a huge issue for Guelph, and so, you know, I'll be championing that. And as part of that, we've been proposing to create a super umbrella organization within the Ministry of Health called Mental Health and Addictions. So resources can be more tightly focused on mental health issues as part of healthcare and be more consistent across the province.
I like the sound of a super umbrella.
Yes, especially on a rainy day.
Yeah. I don't want to end this interview on too much of a downer, but what happens if you don't win? What does June 8th look like for Mike Schreiner if you're not MPP elect?
You know what? I believe I'm going to wake up on June 8th and be Guelph's MPP. Regardless of what happens, though, I will continue to be a very active citizen and somebody who's going to continue to work hard for this community, because I love Guelph, and there's so many things about Guelph I want to fight for. And so regardless of whether I'm the MPP or not, I'm going to continue to be a very active citizen in Guelph and active in the community. But my hope is, and I have a good, I have a good feeling on this. You know what? I've had so many people come up to me in the last 2 weeks and just say, you know what? I'm feeling a bit stuck, Mike.
Mm-hmm.
I've historically voted Liberal, not surprising, in Guelph, but I just can't do it this time. Past the best before date, it's time for a change. But there's no way I'm going to support a Doug Ford-led Conservative Party. I don't think that reflects Guelph's values. And they're sort of saying, well, I'm kind of looking at you. You seem to be the most experienced alternative. And, you know, whether that translates into votes on June 7th, you know, we'll find out on June 7th. But I'm going to continue to work really hard. And for me, the key is to earn people's trust and to earn their respect. And if you do that, then hopefully you earn their vote.
Fair enough. We like to ask every candidate this, and we've kind of already, you've kind of already gave up the ghost when you said it was an under the radar issue earlier. But if there's one thing that you worry is not going to be an issue that's that gets a lot of air in this election, what is it?
I think climate change. You know, I
that was
you,
a very Green Party answer.
It was very, but seriously, on this one, it is, because I'm looking at what's happening with the three status quo parties, and it is hardly being talked about. It's like the biggest crisis we're facing, and it's one of the reasons I feel like I should be in the provincial leaders debate so we could at least have a conversation about it.
Doug Ford wants to cut gas taxes.
Not only that, he wants to get rid of greenhouse gas pollution pricing, and he said he wanted to open the green belt for development. He's backtracked on that. But you would be surprised. And sometimes I wonder, you know, is it just because Mike Schreiner's knocking at your door that people are saying this? But the sleeper issue, another sleeper issue. So affordable housing is one people talk about the most. And of course, jobs and healthcare. But I'm surprised at how many people talk about climate change at the door. And I've wondered if it, you know, it could be because it's just me knocking on the door. But I think there is this anxiety out there. Like, people know we're experiencing a climate crisis. They see it in the droughts and the forest fires and the floods and, you know, the hurricanes, you know, down south. And they know it's happening, and people are looking for a solution. And the Green Party, I think, is offering obviously the best solution, but I think a solution that will create more jobs, help lower energy costs long term, and protect the people in places we love. And who doesn't want that?
Well, we'll have to leave it there. We'll have to leave that on a cliffhanger. Mike, if people want to learn more about the Green Party platform or get in touch with you, how can they do that?
Yeah, so mikeforguelph.ca. Obviously, I'm very active on Twitter, at Mike Schreiner. You can check out the Guelph Greens Twitter feed, as well as the Guelph Greens Facebook page, my personal Facebook page, Mike Schreiner, and then, you know, provincially, gpo.ca.
Okay. He was such a pro, he's able to rattle all that off. Mike, thank you so much for coming in, and good luck on the campaign trail. And I'm sure we will see you around before June 7th.
Definitely.
Whatever may happen.
Absolutely. My pleasure. Always a pleasure to be on.
Thank you. So that is it for this week. Just a programming note, we are supersizing Open Sources next week. We are starting at 4:30.
4:30 kickoff.
So, because we have three candidates coming in next week, Eggy Milners of the NDP, Thomas Mooney of the Alliance, and Paul Taylor of None of the Above will be joining us on the 24th. Sly Castaldi, Mike Rial, and fingers crossed, Ray Ferraro on May 31st. That last one's still to be confirmed, but we're hopeful. Stay connected to us on our website, opensourcesguelph.com. On Facebook at Open Sources Newswire, and on Twitter at OS_Guelph. And of course, you can listen to all previous episodes of Open Sources Guelph on the Guelph Politicast channel on Podbean or through iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play. I am on Twitter at Adam A. Donaldson, or you can go to guelphpolitico.blogspot.ca.
Scott Hertz on Facebook, Scott Hertz on Twitter, at blog at spannerbook.wordpress.com.
And so that was a good show. DJ Sounds Good to Me is here at the top of the hour on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. We'll be back next week at 4:30. Tune your TV, your DVR or whatever you do to 4:30. I don't know how radio works. Anyway, we'll see you next week.